The SEC has been losing some public battles if you also look at what's going on with cryptocurrency. And Gensler doesn't appear to be a popular man in the media from everything I've heard.
Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that brings finance, audit, risk, and sustainability teams together to produce assured integrated reporting. My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debuting a great conversation, and I'm so happy, as always, to have you with us. The other voice you're about to hear is Catherine Tsai. Catherine, you want to jump in?
Sure. I'm Catherine Tsai. I'm an amateur accounting enthusiast and professional asker of questions. One topic that both of us had questions about was a recent federal court ruling against the Securities and Exchange Commission, so the SEC. In June, a three-judge panel of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals set aside the SEC's new private funds rules. They said the SEC didn't have authority to enact rules for private fund advisors. I'm kind of paraphrasing.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I mean, the SEC can enact rules to protect investors so they know exactly what they're investing in. That's been kind of a bedrock thing for the commission for a long time. And this was supposed to apply to somewhat opaque private funds. But the court seemed to agree with hedge fund firms and private equity firms who said their clients aren't actually investors, but the funds they set up for investors. So a little bit of nuance there. And basically, the private fund rules got tossed by the court, and the SEC came back and said, hey, you know what, we're going to back down. Listeners might know that the SEC under Chair Gary Gensler has been defending itself quite a bit with a handful of court challenges over new rules, which of course made us really eager to get a legal perspective on the bigger implications of this recent court ruling.
That's right. So we called up Ron Geffner, who started his career at the SEC as a staff attorney in the 90s. Today, he's in private practice serving hundreds of hedge funds, private equity funds, and venture capital funds. What else should people know, Steve?
Well, I just think it's really interesting. You know, the SEC is always subject to court challenges. That's just kind of a thing. But it does feel a little bit different this time. And given where we're at right now relative to the presidential election, I think the SEC is in a little bit of a, not a tipping point, but maybe a little bit of a wait and see. I don't think we're going to see a ton of rulemaking coming out of the commission, but we are going to see a handful of legal challenges still continue to play out, including the oft-discussed SEC climate rule. Again, big impacts from the presidential election on that, but what we wanted to hear from Ron about was take us through the current legal challenges and what it means. So let's get to our conversation with Ron. Well, we are very excited for our guest today. Joining us is Ron Geffner, partner at Sadison Goldberg, former SEC enforcement lawyer and federal prosecutor.
Ron, welcome to the show, first of all. But I'm wondering if we can dig into your career just a little bit.
Dig away, please.
Yeah, well, how does one actually like get to be part of the SEC?
First, let me thank you for having me today. I would be rude otherwise. I started my career at the SEC. I went through an on-campus interview while I was in law school. Went through many, many rounds of interviews. Ultimately, I found out after the fact, which was far better I found out after fact than before, because I would have been far more nervous. I was told only 6 of us were hired out of an applicant pool out of 2,000.
Oh, wow.
So interviewed and was fortunate enough to be selected. And then when I started at the SEC, of the 6 of us, I was put into a group separate and distinct from the rest of my peers, which is focused on asset management, which was really predominantly two areas of law, the Investment Advisors Act of 1940 and the Investment Company Act of 1940, and dealing with violations of those laws, which generally govern people who manage other people's money.
I know that speaks right to your expertise and experience in working with asset management and hedge funds, private equity, all of that, which is why actually we were hoping to talk to you today.
Without getting into too much details, a lot of news lately about a federal appeals court striking down SEC disclosure rules for hedge funds and private equity firms. Just maybe give us an overall sense of the landscape and how that is maybe changing things going forward.
So, great question. And you're referring to the private fund advisors rule, which affected private funds in a range of ways, but predominantly it was disclosure of or prevention of relationships with their investors and the terms of the relationship with their investors. Let's say, Steve and Catherine, you were investing in my fund that I'm managing. When I say my fund, a fund that I manage. And Catherine's going to give us $500 million to manage in the fund. And Steve, you're putting up $5 million. But in return for the amount of money Catherine's putting up or investing, she wants certain rights. And in part, the SEC was trying to become involved with the ability of people to negotiate and the privacy of their negotiation. And the law, what's called the Private Fund Advisors Rule, was challenged and struck down on June 5th of this year by the Fifth Circuit. And what that, the reason or reasons that the rule was predominantly struck down was, under the Investment Advisors Act, parties who need to register as an investment advisor by that act, the relationship with their clients, that is also governed by the Investment Advisors Act. Where the confusion occurs is the manager's clients are the funds. The investors invest in the fund, while the investors benefit from the relationship that the manager shares with the fund. Ultimately, the client of the advisor is the fund and not the investors. And so the Fifth Circuit stated that the SEC exceeded its authority under the laws. And in part, that was why it was overturned. The other component that went into this was the rules did not seem to be addressing fraud clearly in what the SEC was concerned about that managers may be getting into. Quite frankly, the SEC has other rules and regulations that they can apply to enforce their concerns in which a manager breaches their duty, fails to properly disclose a conflict of interest. It's not black and white. Clearly, the SEC is putting their finger in the hole of a dike to protect the investors or the public that are downstream of the water that might blow out of that dike.
So what happens next then if you're part of the SEC? Are you going to try to rewrite the rule, or what do you think they might do next?
So the SEC allowed the time frame in which they had to appeal to the Fifth Circuit to pass. They still have the availability of going to the Supreme Court for a review. Based on what I'm reading in the marketplace, the expectation is that the SEC will not do that. And the SEC has been losing some public battles. If you also look at what's gone on with cryptocurrency, and Gensler doesn't appear to be a popular man in the media from everything I've read.
Well, let's then maybe connect the dots to some other kind of challenged rules at the SEC. Let's think about maybe climate, for example, that, of course, the SEC voluntarily stayed amidst all the challenges. Where do you think that is headed?
The SEC has been meeting some significant pushback. And not to say that there are people in the marketplace that do not support the SEC's positions with regard to some of the private investor groups had stood alongside the SEC. But the reality, the way I look at it is, if you're concerned about your lack of information in connection with making an investment, then don't make the investment. You vote with your feet, regardless of what the statutes say. And at what point does the government need to step back and allow two people in the private sector to negotiate their terms?
Do you anticipate any funds like voluntarily complying with the SEC rule, even though it's been tossed?
So, but way before the rules and regulations, the Private Fund Advisors Rule was proposed and adopted by the SEC, there is always a sensitivity on the side of the manager who's courting investors to provide a product that aligns with investors as much as it believes it can do suitably. So transparency of information, some firms provide more transparency than others. And some really are not in a position, which is even in the best interest of the investor, to provide certain levels of transparency. What do I mean by that? if there is an illiquid transaction or one that has a limited time frame to execute on by virtue of other things going on in the marketplace, the manager loses its edge, or some of the alpha, we'll call it, by that knowledge or data becoming public, or because of a position being thinly traded. So a case in example is when a fund is shutting down, they keep that information secret, because if you go on and look in the news, there have been many instances where as soon as other managers know that a manager with large positions have to sell it off, they may go and short those positions, driving the price down, thereby hurting the manager who's trying to shut the fund down from getting the best prices of their securities they can for their investors. So there's greater complexity to the use of the data than one might expect. Well, with regard to transparency, and think about how many investor letters that we see that are public that are intended by the manager writing it to be public.
And Ron, I'm wondering, if we think about now the upcoming election, we now know for sure that one way or another we will be switching presidents. I think the SEC is maybe a little bit on the back foot when it comes to the rulemaking agenda and the rulemaking pace. But I'm wondering, if we think about other maybe bigger rules that are kind of hanging out there, for example, like human capital, do you think this changes the SEC's either pace or position? And I realize that in all likelihood we get a new SEC chair in Q1 of next year. But let's maybe put that aside for a second. Where do you see this all playing out with the SEC generally?
Well, it's hard to put aside the elephant in the room that you just said. Disregard that giant beast. Look, if you're working for Gensler and he's directing you to do something and you worry that in several months he may no longer be your boss, I don't know. I can't speak for how that person might act. And especially if they disagree with the position the SEC has taken, I don't know the dynamic of what goes on behind the doors there, because different people lead organizations differently. Some take into consideration the feedback they get from their colleagues, and others may be like, look, like, talk to the hand. I'm telling you what to do. I don't want your opinion. So I'm not sure about that. I mean, I'd also heard rumors for over a year now that Gensler is being replaced, or that they're going to add another commissioner. So many different pieces of speculation. But the one thing seems to be true is it makes me question his authority within the organization on some level, if I'm hearing all the speculation, or the fact that he's not liked on average publicly from what I'm reading. I'm neither like this, like I'm neutral on this. So, you know, to some degree, while I have historical knowledge of the government as it relates to the SEC, I'm no less of an outsider than the two of you are.
And we're very much outsiders. Much as we like to present otherwise.
But so far, the SEC's not batting a strong game. So I sit there and I say, if I am calling the shots, say, look, I need to build confidence not only for everybody involved, for my staff, for the people reviewing the rules, for the people like, all right, great, another rule to challenge, and let's fight the SEC. So in my mind, it's what it has the greatest likelihood of being accepted by the public, what has the greatest likelihood for support, and least amount of challenges that might be meritorious.
Well, for a private equity firm or a hedge fund, what would be your top takeaway from all of this?
To some degree, it's, I don't want to say business as usual, because that doesn't provide a sensitive approach to commercial practice and things that are evolving between investors and managers. And it's dynamic. How people invest their money goes in cycles. So it's, you know, I think it's stay the course as you usually would have done. It's, from my perspective, when we advise clients, I view the risks as follow in order of priority. as a manager, your greatest risk is your relationship with your business partner first. So if Steve and I or Catherine and I were forming a fund together, the nature of our agreement, how well do we know one another, what is our common motivation, but higher likelihood of there being a challenge between that relationship. Two, the relationship then with our investors. Are they stable? Is it diversified? Are we counting, do a minority of the investors control the majority of the assets in the vehicle? And thus, how much at risk are we for them not supporting and continuing to support their investment in our vehicle? The third risk would be counterparties. Our third-party administrator, if we have a relationship with a brokerage firm, operational risks. I view regulators as coming up right after those risks. So when I look at regulatory risk, it's out there. And the bigger you get, the more of a target, I would say, the more risk you run. I was going to say target, but that's not fair. You just become more susceptible because you have a larger number of rules that you have to comply with.
I appreciate that perspective.
Of course. That's why I'm here. That's why I earned the gray hair.
Well, we always like to wrap up with maybe a little more of a lighthearted question. And so, Ron, for our audience, if you were creating your own vanity private equity fund, what would you name it in order to attract investors?
Now, the funny part is, over the last 20 years, I've thrown out names when you read a name. And I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if they named their fund this? Now, none of those things would I ever say publicly because they're completely inappropriate.
It's okay. Nobody listens to the podcast. It's just the three of us talking, Ron. Just go ahead and lay it out for us.
Just between us.
I got it. We're in the tree of safety.
Yeah, that's right.
I completely hear you. The other thing, by way of note, I'm one of the founders of the law firm, and I left my name off of the law firm. And when I watch some of these shows on social media, like Million Dollar Listing or Buying New York, I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't call it the Geffner Group. It just doesn't sit well with me. I think it would be more focused on whatever I think the opportunity is. So where I would probably utilize a name of the sector. So whether it's crypto, cannabis, biotech, or healthcare, it would go more towards that on the vanity side, but it would not have, with certainty, would not have my last name in it. And I wouldn't call it like Silver Fox Partners or anything of that nature to have fun with it.
I like the Silver Fox Partners personally. I think that there's a little bit of elegance there. It's classy. It's funny, but it's classy.
Exactly. Try not to lose money, partners.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Catherine, any like C-note money managers or something? Like what?
C-note would be pretty good. But I have a journalism background, so I thought I'd call it Write Stuff. W-R-I-T-E stuff.
There you go.
Well. Did you have an answer, Steve, for...
No, I actually have no answer whatsoever. I've been racking my brain, like trying to like, you got to think of something quick. And I got absolutely nothing.
A fancy accounting and finance honcho like you shouldn't be wasting time chasing data or copying and pasting numbers. No, use your fancy degree the way your parents always hoped you would. Workiva can help. Whether you're prepping or auditing annual reports or quarterly board presentations, you can use the Workiva platform to automate risky manual processes. Accelerate how you collect, report, and audit financial and non-financial data without sacrificing accuracy so you can stand behind your story every time. Learn more at workiva.com/accounting.
The SEC is going to keep trying to come up with the rules and regulations, and they're well-intended. So I'm not beating them up for that reason.
They're definitely giving us a lot of things to watch.
Yeah, exactly. And I genuinely am really interested. I mean, obviously, notwithstanding those huge elephants in the room, Ron, as you mentioned, it will be really interesting to see how this plays out over the course of the next, 6 to 9 months.
Real quick, keep in mind that when there's blood on the ground and investors have lost money, the SEC often gets blamed, which is also unfair because... First and foremost, it's the investor's obligation to do their diligence. And people spend more time picking out a couch sometimes than they do the mutual funds they allocate to or their investment products.
Very true.
Well, Ron Geffner, partner at Sadus & Goldberg, so good to have you here. Really appreciate the discussion. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate the opportunity. It was great to meet you and Catherine.
Well, thank you again to Ron Geffner, and thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Catherine Tsai. You heard Steve Soder, and this has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva.
Please subscribe and follow us so you can catch all of our upcoming episodes.
If you like Off the Books, tell us what you think. We'd love if you could leave us a review. That helps us out a lot. And if you're watching this on YouTube, drop a comment for Steve or for Ron or for me and let us know what you think will happen with other SEC rules.
That's right. We would love to hear from you. We would also love it if you have an idea for a future episode. Go ahead and drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next one.